What's the shift that you've seen in terms of percentage of customers pre-pandemic and post-pandemic leveraging telehealth?
I think prior to the pandemic, there was some skepticism that we could actually administer care through, you know, a telehealth platform, but we proved that wrong.
Welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Mike Katz, president of the business group at T-Mobile. And today I'm talking with Carissa Rollins, chief information officer for United Health Group. In 2017, Carissa joined United Healthcare Group, which includes both Optum Pharmacy and United Health, the nation's largest healthcare insurer, serving over 140 million Americans. Since becoming CIO last year, Carissa has led the company's all-up technology strategy and investments across United Health businesses. She is a member of CNBC's Technology Executive Council, and she's also on the board of YMCA, focused on women's health and other issues. Well, Carissa, thank you so much for joining. I'm so glad to finally have you on Taking Care of Business.
Thanks for having me. This is great. Super excited.
So I know you're joining us from just outside Minneapolis. Is it safe to go outside, or have you reached that time of year yet?
Oh, no. It's always safe to go outside. I love the winter. I'm a Midwest girl. It's good.
You just need like three jackets?
Yeah. You know, I got a heated vest. I'm all set. Boots. But it's very beautiful here.
I actually wanted to get into a little bit more of what you do. And I wanted to get your perspective on how technology is affecting what you and your company do. You know, especially for a company like United Health that's supporting health and well-being for tens of millions of people. How do you see technology changing your job and the way that patients and customers of United Healthcare work with your company?
Yeah, I think really two things. One is really AI and ML is accelerating how we can personalize healthcare for our members, right? We have a lot of data and we wanna make sure that we're sharing that data across the system. And that's really accelerated here with the pandemic, the ability to share data, the desire to share data across the healthcare system so that we can really take care of our society and help people live healthier lives. And AI is really helping us personalize healthcare by making sure we're getting people to the right caregivers, getting them the right procedures for them, and really helping them get the right care that they need. So we're really excited about that, number one. I'd say number two, AI and ML is really helping us change how we administer healthcare. So because it's really been a paper-based system for a long time, right? You have physician groups that have their own technology. There hasn't been a lot of data sharing, some, but not enough. AI and ML really gives us the opportunity to change how we administer healthcare, which is going to reduce the time that caregivers are spending, you know, entering data, sharing data, writing things down on a piece of paper, so we can actually focus on people and focus on helping them get healthy and stay healthy. So those are two things. And then I'd say the other thing that you're helping us with is really 5G. And 5G is going to really put care in the hands of people that have chronic conditions through devices and allow them to take care of themselves using those devices or their caregivers using the 5G network. So we're excited about our partnership with you on that.
We are too. And I would love to double click on a couple of things that you said there. So AI, machine learning, 5G, and kind of practical terms. How do you see, you talked about the benefits that you're seeing. If you're a patient or a customer of United Healthcare, how are those things translating into kind of finding the right services or right provider or going and seeking healthcare when in other situations you may not have?
Yeah, well, first of all, during the pandemic, I think from a technology perspective, not just with AI and ML, we saw telehealth explode. So we can talk about that as one opportunity. But I think with AI and ML and interoperability and the sharing of data, we're getting data not only about healthcare, but you know, other services that people are seeking to take care of themselves. And that then gives us another opportunity to double click down on. It's not just about the medical care that somebody needs. It's also about some of the social determinants of health. Like maybe they're having trouble getting to the doctor. We may be calling in and saying, you really need to go in for this procedure, and they haven't gone, and it's because they can't get there, or they're afraid to go. So we can help with transportation services through that because we know, right, that they maybe need that. Maybe if they live in an area or in public housing where there's a food desert or they're having trouble with housing, we provide services through some of our programs like United Healthcare Catalyst to help them find housing, to help them get food, help them get meals if necessary, and again, get transportation. So AI helping with some of that, using the data that we have available to us. I'd say from a pandemic perspective and the acceleration of telehealth, that's been a really big opportunity for us to provide care to those that maybe were in an area of the country that they couldn't get, say, behavioral physicians or behavioral doctors because they're in a small remote area where they don't have access to that type of care, those type of professionals. Prior to the pandemic, there were about 10,000 of our clinicians on a telehealth platform, and now we have tens of thousands of physicians on our telehealth platform. So again, that helped us accelerate things that would have taken years in days and weeks, which was awesome.
You mentioned like how big and the number of clinicians that are now on telehealth. From an end user perspective, from a patient perspective, what's the shift that you've seen in terms of percentage of customers pre-pandemic and post-pandemic leveraging telehealth?
Well, during the pandemic, there was a significant increase in the number of people. I don't have the exact percentages. I mean, we've obviously seen a decline, but it's not going away. People really loved the convenience. I think prior to the pandemic, there was some skepticism that we could actually administer care through, you know, a telehealth platform. But we proved that wrong, right, during the pandemic. And so people are using it as a convenient way to access care, right? We're all very busy. We don't have time to sit in a waiting room. We don't have time to search online and figure out how to get an appointment. And telehealth has given us a way to triage issues that maybe our family is having. And then once you're in that telehealth realm, help us schedule appointments with specialists if necessary. So definitely an increase. It's not going away. And I would say the other, again, benefit of that has been the access to behavioral professionals through that platform that weren't accessible before.
You mentioned 5G a second ago. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is you definitely have seen an increase in wearable technologies that have converged a little bit with healthcare. Like, you know, Apple Watch has pulse oximeter in it. For instance, what are you seeing in that space and what are you optimistic about in terms of 5G-enabled healthcare and wearable devices? And how and when do you think that will start to converge with some of this telehealth capabilities that we were just talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely the interoperability, again, of those devices and being able to get that data through 5G or any other platform for that matter, but being able to get that data, use that data to then personalize some type of intervention for that person or to just help them drive to the right programs that they may need additional assistance in, like a weight loss program or a different type of exercise program or even some type of a clinical care program, pre-diabetic. There's lots of programs around those particular spaces. So I think there's tons of opportunity there. We have recently signed a deal with Peloton. So I don't know if you saw that in the news. So we're starting to gather that data, right? So we're consolidating that data for our members. We're also rewarding them. So a lot of the wellness data that's coming back through those devices, we're rewarding our members for steps, for the Peloton activity, and more to come on that. My team is working hard on the more to come on that. So, yes.
That's so cool. My Peloton handle, by the way, is "Don't ride so much." So, if you want to look for
okay,
me there,
awesome.
You won't see me. You won't see me on there very often. But can you talk about when we talked a lot about patients and benefits that patients are seeing and how it's changing the relationship that you have with patients? How about your relationship with clinicians and supply chain and drug manufacturers? How has that evolved over the same time period?
Yeah, I would say with clinicians, I can speak mostly about that, not so much about drug manufacturers, not really my space, but with clinicians, that's the best place to intervene in the care for our members, right? They trust the person that they're sitting in front of, their doctor, their healthcare provider. And we together have a lot of data that can help make sure, again, that we're putting them on the right care path to keep them healthy. Or in the event that we have data about maybe a condition that's underlying or potential in the future, making sure that we're putting them on the right care plan. And the best way to do that is to intervene with the physician. We have a program called POCA, or Point of Care Assist, that will, right in the care path, when the member is sitting in the office with the doctor, let the physician know what the next step should be and recommend specialists.
One thing that I've heard you say is that when thinking about the global shift to telehealth and telemedicine, that really women have been behind that shift. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by that, and why you think that women have been the key to mass adoption and the big shift of consumption of telemedicine?
Yeah, well, women in general consume healthcare services more than men. We can all speculate why, but they do. One of the reasons why is women are still the primary caregivers at home, right? And when someone in their family is sick, they're the ones that are seeking care mostly. And telehealth has given them a new platform that's convenient, that's easy, that they trust to do that. No longer are they sitting in a waiting room with other moms and sick kids or dads and sick kids. They can do it right from their living room. And two, with children that are maybe apprehensive to go to the doctor, unvaccinated yet, they can do it from home and not have to worry about that on their own time, right? Now, mothers obviously during the last year and a half had really taken a hit in going back to work and in their work environment, or leaving the workforce in droves, because they just don't have the time to do everything in front of them, work, take care of their family, you know, school, and telehealth has provided at least one relief to all the myriad of things that they have. I would say the other thing that's happened recently with women's health is the expansion of femtech. In just this last year, there's been $1.3 billion invested in digital women's health initiatives through startups. And traditionally, women's health has been underserved. It's been mostly about childbearing and pregnancy. And these femtech organizations are taking on new challenges in women's health. And that might too be because there's a lot more women in healthcare from a physician level, and a lot of women interested in getting into startups that help women in healthcare journeys.
I imagine that what happened with the pandemic, and you've kind of mentioned this indirectly a couple times, that the pandemic kind of forced this massive adoption of telehealth faster than what would have otherwise happened. Now that telehealth isn't kind of a thing sitting out there that people sometimes do and don't use, but it's really a mainstream technology and a mainstream way that people interact with their healthcare professionals, where do you see it going next? Like, how does it evolve? What things do you see out on the horizon that excite you, that make it a better, more impactful, more powerful experience for everybody involved, both the clinicians and the patients?
Well, I think Navigate Now, the new product that we launched on November 1st, is really the first of the types of products you will see going forward, where virtual care is the first place that you go. So with Navigate Now, you are assigned a primary care physician, or you pick a primary care physician, and your visits with your primary care physician are all virtual. And that's where your healthcare journey starts, with either an incident or something that you need to solve, or even just general care. It's always a virtual first transaction. And I see the industry will go to more products associated with virtual care being first. My hope, and I've seen some of this already, is that not only will we do that for medical-based issues, but also behavioral. We'll get some products out there that will really address behavioral health issues for those that are most vulnerable and who maybe don't want to have the stigma of walking into a behavioral health clinic, but will do it, you know, sitting in the comfort of their living room or using their phone someplace. So my hope is that those type of products will develop, and I'm sure they will, tying, you know, whole person care through medical, behavioral, and pharmaceutical in the virtual platform. Now, obviously not everything can be done virtually. We also have dental, obviously a lot of dental insurance here as well. And we were all skeptical that a dental visit could be done via virtual care. And we were proved wrong that, you know, the initial triage can be done via virtual care for dentists, and they're using that platform and then directing the care appropriately to whatever type of procedure needs to be done. So yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, that might be one of the biggest selling points. People not having to go to the dentist. I think people would be pretty excited about that.
Yes.
you know, something I know that you and I share in common is how passionate both of us are about solving inequities that exist. And people that have listened to this podcast have heard me talk a lot about inequities that exist in the digital divide. You know, this last year, one of the things that I talked a lot about was how it manifests with students, mm-hmm. Especially when schools were shut down and they had to go virtual, and people that didn't have access to broadband were just simply left behind. And I know you've talked a lot about how the pandemic worsened existing inequities and disparities in things like access to food and housing. I'd love to hear from you about how those things, you know, your perspective on how those things translated into access and equity and health. And what are some of the things that you and United Health are doing to address those?
Yeah, we recently launched a program called United Healthcare Catalyst, which brings together, it's a clinical database program that brings together local governments and local community organizations in areas where there is public housing and the communities around them. So we're using our data and data that we've obtained about the community, as well as talking to local government and community organizations about the issues that community is facing and those members or those individuals in public housing are facing. Only 20% of medical issues are really related to a clinical intervention or solved by clinical intervention. 80% of medical issues are really about food disparity, housing insecurity, lack of transportation, like I've talked about before. And United Healthcare has really stepped up and has provided meals, not only for our own members, but for people in these communities that are struggling. Helping people find housing, purchase housing, and place some of our members in housing. So we really have done a lot in this space, and I think that's going to continue until we solve some of these really disparities in the social determinants of health. We aren't going to solve all the medical problems. We will continue to see issues in that space. So our most vulnerable Medicaid and dual SNP members are the ones that we focus on.
With all the adoption of telehealth, how concerned are you about then the digital divide as well? And people lacking access to broadband? If telehealth is going to start to become a predominant way that people interact with their healthcare providers, you know, how big of a concern is it for you that large portions of our population don't have access to adequate broadband?
Yeah, it's a concern for us. Definitely a concern for us, which is why we like our partnership and some of the things we're testing out, because I think if we can get devices in the hands of community organizations and caregivers in those communities that can get to the homes or even to the areas where people are struggling to find homes, if we can get devices in their hands that and have broadband service, we can access care, we can get care to those individuals. So you and I in the technology space working together, I think, can really make a change for those most vulnerable in our populations and really change, you know, and help people live healthier lives here in society. I think a lot of people focused on during the pandemic, really our society coming together. It was pretty amazing, but it really did show the disparity, and we need to do something about it. And both of our companies are in a position to do that. I really appreciate your 10 million project, because I also work with the YWCA here in town, and there were a lot of kids that really struggled to have access to broadband and access to computers, and the Y really helped out with that here in town as well. So,
yeah, one of the things that it surprised us a little bit, and you know, we really didn't think about it as we were in the thick of trying to get as many kids connected as possible. But the second most used application from kids and families that we distributed connectivity through through Project 10 Million, the second most used application was telehealth.
Oh,
and
wow!
You know, to me that was. That was such a powerful example of why these connections are so important. You know, it was obviously really, really important to make sure kids could participate in school and it was virtual, but we didn't fully think through until we saw the data how important it was and what a lifeline these connections were to get not just the kids themselves, but their entire families access to critical healthcare.
Wow, that's great to hear. I didn't know that.
Hey, Kristen, one question for you is in terms of United Health. United Health's a big company, you know, like T-Mobile. obviously this last year has been weird, and you know people were sent home and offices were closed. How's the work of running a company like United Healthcare going, and how has it changed, and how is your employee base working as we're still in the kind of the heat of this pandemic?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm super proud of the work that our IT team did to get everybody home as quickly as they could, right? And that was, it went off without a hitch. Super proud of the work that has been done. We continue to have a majority of our workforce at home and continue to improve how we're making sure they have access to everything they need in their home environment. Everybody's in this weird, like, return to work situation. When is it going to happen? When is it not going to happen? We have a great team of people that are working on that. I think we all agree that the future of work looks very differently than it did in, you know, January of 2020. And we're all trying to figure out what it means and what it looks like. But what I tell my team is they've been very productive. They've been super engaged. I haven't had a single concern about us not being able to deliver on what our business has needed and what our members have needed. So I say, you do you, right? You do what you need to do to take care of your family, and you do you whatever you need to do to take care of work. So far it's worked out. We'll see what happens when return to work really, really occurs, but it will be very different. Yeah.
Well, I got to say congratulations, because you sit in such a unique position relative to even a lot of other CIOs in America, where you had to balance that, which every CIO in America has been balancing, trying to get their entire employee base productive and connected to the workplace. But you simultaneously have had to do that across your core business, mm-hmm. you know, with all of the patients and customers that you serve, with the healthcare providers you preserve. And it's so incredible to hear about the progress you made and the impact you're having. So just a huge congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for your help.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I've got some rapid fire questions for you.
Sure.
So you mentioned you are a Wisconsin native, and now you live in Minnesota. So I'm assuming you are used to seeing snow.
I love snow.
What's your favorite snowy day activity?
I usually start with drinking a cup of coffee and sitting on the couch and reading a mindless novel. But then I love to get outside and take the dogs for a walk and just look at the winter wonderland of snow. I love snow.
So you just walk around and enjoy the snow. So
absolutely.
No skiing or snowshoeing or anything like that. Just walking around.
I'm not a skier. Not a skier. But nope, I don't need snowshoes. Boots are good.
you live in Minnesota now. You know, we know Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes. What's your favorite lake?
Minnetonka. Yeah, for sure. We're out there every Saturday if we can. Saturday and Sunday sometimes, but that's my happy place, sitting on the boat, just chilling out.
I think you may have given this up at the beginning, but what's your favorite sport?
Football.
And I'm just guessing that you said your favorite football team is the Packers. Who's your favorite Packer?
Brett Favre.
Brett Favre, ah.
Yes, I've followed his entire career.
One really important question, even though you said your current quarterback isn't your favorite quarterback, I'm assuming he's got to be like in the top five, right?
Sure.
Will he still be in the top five when he's playing for the Broncos next year?
No.
Well, Krista, I thank you so much. This was great. Again, I appreciate so much everything that you've done. I'm sure this last year has been incredibly stressful for you and your team, and it's just incredible how you've been able to unleash probably a decade of technology in a year and a half, both to support your team and being able to productively work over the last year and a half, but more importantly, being able to ensure that the millions of people that you serve continue to have access to healthcare. And, you know, in a kind of strange twist, have maybe better access to healthcare than they've ever had. So again, congratulations, and thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
As a reminder, for each episode of this season of Taking Care of Business, we are excited to expand our Project 10 Million donation to a school district of our guest choice, making further progress towards bridging the digital schoolwork gap. To our listeners, thank you so much for joining, And we'll see you next time on Taking Care of Business. In 2017, Carissa joined United Healthcare Group.